Hello everyone, I'm delighted to be with you today to talk about Hong Kong's insider dealing regime under the Securities and Futures Ordinance and the changes that will be made to expand its scope following the SFC's publication of its consultation conclusions in August 2023. The Securities and Futures Ordinance contains civil and criminal market misconduct offences under parts 13 and 14 of the SFO, respectively. These cover six types of market misconduct: insider dealing, false trading, price rigging, disclosure of information about prohibited transactions, disclosure of false and misleading information inducing transactions, and stock market manipulation. Part 14 of the SFO contains three additional criminal offences under sections 300 to 302, which have no civil equivalent under Part 13 and fall outside the definition of market misconduct. These are using fraudulent or deceptive devices in transactions in securities, futures, or leveraged exchange trading, disclosing false or misleading information inducing others to enter leveraged foreign exchange contracts, and falsely representing dealings in futures contracts on behalf of others. Civil cases of market misconduct are dealt with by the Market Misconduct Tribunal, while criminal cases go before the courts. As I will talk about later, the SFC can also apply to the Court of First Instance under Section 213 of the SFO for various orders against someone who has committed market misconduct. In recent years, Section 213 has become the SFC's preferred means of obtaining compensation for investors who have suffered loss as a result of insider dealing. Let's start off with the question, what is insider dealing? Well, in broad terms, insider dealing happens when a person connected with a Hong Kong listed company, for example, a director or a staff member, has privileged information which could impact the company's share price when it becomes publicly known, and they trade or procure someone else to trade the company's securities or derivatives so as to make a profit or avoid a loss before the information becomes publicly available. Or a person obtains information from someone else they know to be connected with a listed company, and they trade or procure another person to trade in the company's securities or derivatives so as to make a profit or avoid a loss before the information becomes publicly available. The SFO's definition of insider dealing in sections 270 and 291 of the SFO sets out seven circumstances which constitute the offence of insider dealing. The first situation constituting insider dealing happens under section 271A and 291(1A) when a person connected with a listed company has information which they know is inside information in relation to that company, and they deal in the company's listed securities or their derivatives, or in those of a related corporation, or they counsel or procure another person to deal in those listed securities or derivatives, knowing or having reasonable cause to believe that the other person will deal in them. This is the classic case of insider dealing. Takeover offers. The second situation in which insider dealing can happen is in the context of a takeover offer, when a person who is contemplating or has contemplated making a takeover offer for a listed company and knows that the information that the offer is contemplated or is no longer contemplated is inside information, either deals in the company's listed securities or their derivatives, or in those of a related corporation otherwise than for the purpose of the takeover, or that person counsels or procures another person to deal in those listed securities or derivatives, otherwise than for the purpose of the takeover. The provision is designed to stop, for example, a director of a company which is about to launch a takeover bid from telling their friends to buy shares in the intended market in order to make a profit when the price of those shares rises. However, it does not stop the bidder's directors from buying the target company's shares or counseling or procuring others to buy them in what's known as a dawn raid, where the sole purpose of these purchases is to facilitate the takeover offer itself. This provision would also catch, for example, a director of the bidder who short sells the target company's shares when they know, but the public does not know, that the bidder is not going to increase its offer price at the end of the initial offer period, but will instead let the offer lapse. The third situation, which will amount to insider dealing, is where a person connected with a listed company has information which they know is inside information in relation to the company and discloses the information, either directly or indirectly, to another person, knowing or having reasonable cause to believe that the other person will use the information to deal or counsel or procure another person to deal in the company's listed securities or their derivatives, or in those of a related corporation. The purpose of this provision is to catch those who intentionally leak confidential information with the expectation that the recipient, the person tipped off or a third party, will use that information to make a favorable deal trading the securities on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange. Insider dealing also occurs when a person who is contemplating or has contemplated making a takeover offer for a listed company and knows that the information that the offer is contemplated or no longer contemplated is inside information, discloses the information directly or indirectly to another person, knowing or having reasonable cause to believe that the other person will use the information to deal or to counsel or procure another person to deal in the company's listed securities or their derivatives or in those of a related corporation. Insider dealing can also be committed when a person has received information from another person if they know that the information is inside information relating to the listed company, that the person is connected with that company, and they know or have reasonable cause to believe that the person held that information because of their connection with the company. The offence of insider dealing will be committed if the person receiving the information deals in the company's listed securities or their derivatives, or in those of a related corporation, or counsels or procures another person to deal in those listed securities or their derivatives. This catches the recipient of leaked information who uses it either by dealing himself or by counseling or procuring someone else to deal. The person who actually leaks the information would be caught by sections 271C and 2913. The fact that the identity of the connected person who leaked the information is unknown does not prevent the person who deals on the basis of the inside information from being convicted under this section. Insider dealing also happens when a person has received information from a person they know or has reasonable cause to believe is contemplating or no longer contemplating making a takeover offer for a listed company, when they know that the information is inside information in relation to the company. The offence occurs if the person who has received the information, who is sometimes called the tippee, deals in the company's listed securities or their derivatives, or in those of a related corporation, or counsels or procures someone else to do so. This provision covers the recipient of the leaked information who uses it either by dealing himself or by counseling or procuring someone else to deal. The person who actually leaks the information would be covered by sections 271D and 2914. The final circumstance in which insider dealing can occur is when a person knowingly has inside information in relation to a listed company in any of the circumstances set out in subsection 271 and subsections 291, 1 to 6, and that person either counsels or procures another person to deal in the company's listed securities or their derivatives or in those of a related corporation, and knows or has reasonable cause to believe that the other person will deal in those securities or derivatives outside Hong Kong on an overseas stock market, or discloses the inside information to another person, knowing or having reasonable cause to believe that they or some other person will use the inside information to deal or counsel or procure another person to deal in the company's listed securities or their derivatives or in those of a related corporation outside Hong Kong on an overseas stock market. These provisions on dealing outside Hong Kong on an overseas stock market extend the scope of the insider dealing regime to dealings in securities that are dual listed in Hong Kong and on an overseas market. For this final type of insider dealing only, the SFC extends the mens rea element, the intention element. The person disclosing the inside information must know or have reasonable cause to believe that the person to whom the inside information has been disclosed or some other person will use the inside information. One of the amendments that is going to be made to the SFO's insider dealing provisions will extend this mens rea intention element to the other types of insider dealing that take place through disclosure of inside information. Looking now at the definitions used in the insider dealing provisions, as you can see from the slide, securities are broadly defined in Part 1 of Schedule 1 to the SFO and include shares, stocks, debentures, loans, stocks, funds, bonds or notes of or issued by or which it's reasonably foreseeable will be issued by a body, whether incorporated or unincorporated, or a government or municipal government authority. Rights, options or interests, whether described as units or otherwise, in or in respect of any of these. And certificates of interest or participation in, temporary or interim certificates for, receipts for or warrants to subscribe for or purchase any of the items mentioned. The definition also includes interests in collective investment schemes, any interest, rights or property commonly known as securities, and structured products not falling within the instruments I've just mentioned. A structured product is then defined as an instrument under which some or all of the return or amount due, or both the return and the amount due, or the method of settlement is determined by reference to one or more of changes in the price, value or level, or a range within the price, value or level of any type of or combination of types of securities, commodity, index, property, interest rate, currency exchange rate, or futures contract, or changes in the price, value, or level, or a range within the price, value, or level of any basket of more than one type, or any combination of types of securities, commodity, index, property, interest rate, currency exchange rate, or futures contract, or the occurrence or non-occurrence of any specified event or events, excluding an event or events relating only to the issuer or guarantor of the instrument or to both the issuer and the guarantor. The definition of structured products also includes regulated investment agreements and any other property or interests that the SFC prescribes as structured products under Section 392 of the SFO. The SFO's current definition of listed securities only includes securities listed on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange at the time of the dealing in question. In order to cover grey market dealings prior to a secondary issue of securities, the definition of listed securities also includes issued unlisted securities if at the time of the insider dealing it is reasonably foreseeable that they will be listed and they are subsequently in fact listed, and unissued securities provided that at the time of the insider dealing it's reasonably foreseeable that they will be issued and listed and they are subsequently in fact issued and listed. Securities that have been suspended from trading are also treated as listed. Insider dealing involving securities that are listed on foreign exchanges and are not dual listed in Hong Kong and overseas is not currently covered as insider dealing under the SFO. This is because the insider dealing offences cover dealings in listed securities, which are defined as securities listed on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange. The Hong Kong courts have therefore relied instead on the offence of using fraudulent or deceptive devices in transactions and securities, futures contracts or leveraged foreign exchange trading under Section 300 of the SFO in cases where the securities in question are listed outside Hong Kong. The key case on the applicability of Section 300 to insider dealing in overseas listed shares is the 2018 case of SFC and Young Vic Fung and others. The case involved two Hong Kong solicitors, Betty and Eric, who were found guilty of illegally profiting from dealings based on inside information relating to shares listed in Taiwan. This was the first time the SFC invoked Section 300 to prosecute individuals who had used inside information to trade shares listed outside Hong Kong. The facts were that Betty had been seconded by a law firm to a Hong Kong bank to assist with the bank's takeover by way of tender offer of Sin Chu International Bank, which was listed on the Taiwan Stock Exchange. The two banks conducted confidential negotiations in August and September 2006, and the tender offer was announced on the 29th of September 2006. Betty was aware of the tender offer and the proposed offer price before the announcement was made, and the court found that information to be confidential, price-sensitive information in relation to Sin Chu Bank. On the 20th of September 2006, a sister of one of the solicitors opened a securities account with a Hong Kong broker, and the defendants each injected substantial sums into that account between the 21st and 29th of September, raising the funds through loans, overdrafts, and liquidating portions of their investment portfolios. The sister purchased just over 1.5 million shares in Sin Chu Bank before the announcement of the tender offer. She then accepted the tender offer for all the shares and distributed the profits of around 2.6 million to the other defendants pro rata to their contributions. Given the extraterritorial feature of the case, the court relied on Section 300 of the SFO, which prohibits fraudulent or deceptive schemes in transactions involving securities. As the securities involved were listed in Taiwan, the defendant's conduct was outside the scope of Hong Kong's insider dealing regime. However, since the offer to buy the securities was made in Hong Kong, the court held that Section 300 applied. The court also accepted that the sisters' acceptance of the tender offer in Hong Kong would have brought the case within the scope of Section 300. The court held that Betty's conduct, misusing material price-sensitive information and knowingly breaching the dealing restrictions that applied to her, amounted to a scheme or act of deception under Section 300. The Court of Final Appeal upheld the court's ruling, stating that Section 300 could be applied in respect of securities listed outside Hong Kong, provided substantial activities constituting the crime occurred within Hong Kong, which they did in this case. As I'll cover later, under the amendments that are going to be made to the SFO, the SFO's insider dealing provisions will be extended to include insider dealing carried out in Hong Kong with respect to securities that are listed on overseas stock markets or their derivatives. This means that in future, cases like the Yong Bek Fung case can be dealt with under the insider dealing regime, and the courts will not have to resort to relying on Section 300. As I'll discuss later, the definition of listed securities will be extended under the upcoming amendments to the SFO to include overseas listed securities and their derivatives. A person connected with a company, that is, an insider, is someone who is on the inside track, who has access to information about a company by reason of their relationship with it. Under sections 247 and 287, an individual is regarded as connected with a company if they are a director, shadow director, an employee, or a substantial shareholder. That's someone holding 5% or more of the voting shares of that company or a related corporation. A person will also be considered as connected with a company if their position may reasonably be expected to give them access to inside information about the company by virtue of a professional or business relationship between the person or their employer, a company of which the person is a director, or a firm of which they're a partner, and that company. A related corporation or an officer or substantial shareholder in either the company or the person being a director, employee, or partner of a substantial shareholder of the company or a related corporation. A person will also be considered to be connected with a company if they have access to inside information by virtue of being connected, within the meaning I just talked about, with another company, and the inside information relates to a transaction or contemplated transaction involving both companies or involving one of them and the listed securities of the other or their derivatives, or to the fact that the transaction is no longer contemplated. Finally, a person will also be regarded as connected with a company if they would have been deemed to be connected in any of the ways I just described at any time in the 6 months before any relevant dealing. A company is regarded as connected with another company if any of its directors or employees are so connected. Under sections 248 and 288 of the SFO, any public officer, member or employee of certain bodies, for example, LegCo, who in their capacity as such obtains inside information about a company, will be deemed to be connected with that company. The term corporation is defined to include the large number of overseas incorporated companies that are listed on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange. Two or more companies are regarded as related corporations of each other if one of them is the holding company of the other, a subsidiary of the other, or a subsidiary of the other company's holding company. Companies are also regarded as related if the same individual controls the composition of the board of directors or controls more than half of the voting power at general meetings of two or more companies. They're also regarded as related if the same individual holds more than half of the issued share capital of two or more companies. However, holdings of shares which carry no right to participate beyond a specified amount on a distribution of profits or capital in more than one company will not make two companies related corporations. Inside information in relation to a company is defined in section 2451 of the SFO as specific information about the company, a shareholder or officer of the company, or the company's listed securities or their derivatives, which is not generally known to the persons who are accustomed or would be likely to deal in the company's listed securities, but which would, if it were generally known to them, be likely to materially affect the price of the listed securities. Inside information can, for example, include information about changes in a company's shareholders or officers and about the rights attaching to listed securities and derivatives over those securities. The same definition of inside information applies to Hong Kong listed companies' obligation to publicly announce inside information under Part 14A of the SFO. Looking at the requirements for information to be categorized as inside information, the first requirement is that the information must be specific, which means that it must be capable of being identified, defined, and unequivocally expressed. In the case of Firstone International Holdings Limited, it was determined that information will be sufficiently specific if it carries with it such particulars as to a transaction, event or matter, or proposed transaction, event or matter, so as to allow that transaction, event or matter to be identified and its nature to be coherently described and understood. However, information does not need to be precise in order to be considered specific. According to the SFC guidelines on disclosure of inside information, it is not necessary that all particulars or details of the transaction, event or matter are precisely known. Information may still be specific, even if it has a vague quality, and may be broad and allow room, even substantial room, for further particulars. For instance, information that a company is having a financial crisis would be regarded as specific, as would contemplating a share placing, even if the details are not known. Specific information, however, needs to be distinguished from mere rumors, vague hopes and worries, and unsubstantiated conjecture, which do not amount to inside information. For information to constitute inside information, it must be information that is not generally known to the market, that is not generally known by the persons who are accustomed or would be likely to deal in the company's listed securities. Rumors or media speculation relating to a company does not mean the information is generally known, a distinction which the SFC has noted. Information relating to a company that appears in the media, analyst research reports or electronic subscription databases cannot be assumed to be information that is generally known to the market, even where media reports are widely circulated. In assessing whether this kind of information is generally known, it's necessary to consider not only how widely the information is disseminated, but also the accuracy and completeness of the information and whether the market can rely on that information. In determining whether a particular piece of information is generally known, the question to ask is whether the sources contain all the information the company would need to disclose as inside information under Section 307(b)(3) of the SFO, so that there are no material omissions which could make the disclosure false or misleading. The other question to determine is whether the market will realize that the information in those sources reflects the information known to the company, and whether the information will be regarded as speculation or the opinion of persons outside the company. If the information known to the market is incomplete or there are material omissions or doubts as to its bona fides, the information cannot be considered to be generally known. Section 2451 requires that inside information must be information which would, if it were generally known to the wider investing public, to be likely to materially affect the price of the listed securities. This means that the information must affect the price of the listed securities. It's not sufficient for the price-sensitive information to merely affect the price of the securities. It must have a material effect on the securities price. According to the SFC guidelines on inside information disclosure, information that is likely materially to affect the price of a company's securities is information which may well materially affect the price. That is to say, it has to be more likely than less likely that the price will be affected materially. The standard by which materiality is judged is whether the information on the particular share would influence persons who would be likely to deal in the share, in deciding whether or not to buy or sell it. The test of whether the information is likely to materially affect the price is necessarily a hypothetical one, since it has to be applied at the time the information becomes available. There are no fixed thresholds of price movements or quantitative criteria that can determine the materiality of a price movement. Volatility of blue chip shares is typically less than that of small, less liquid stocks, and blue chip securities usually move within ranges narrower than those of small stocks. Hence, smaller percentage movements may be material for large company stocks. While the actual magnitude of the share price movement once the information becomes publicly known can provide an indication of the probable impact that the information would have had, this is not conclusive. It's possible that the actual price change once the information is released is moderate due to the mixed impact of the information released and other extraneous factors. Further, a material price movement may have been preempted by the fact that the share price has already declined substantially in the period leading up to the release of the information. Under Section 249 of the SFO, a person deals whether they act as principal or agent. Agreeing to deal and buying or selling the right to deal will also be dealings under the SFO. Sections 271 and 292 of the SFO set out various defences to insider dealing. The available defences include the situation where a person dealt or counselled or procured a dealing for the sole purpose of acquiring qualifying shares as a director or intending director of a company. A person will also have a defence if they acted in good faith in performing obligations under an underwriting agreement with respect to the listed securities or derivatives, or as a liquidator, receiver, or trustee in bankruptcy. A company, such as an investment bank or sponsor firm, may have a defence against insider dealing allegations if it can demonstrate that it had effective internal controls in place, that is, Chinese walls, to ring-fence any inside information possessed by its directors and employees. Additionally, the company must show that each individual who made the decision for the company to deal, counsel, or procure a dealing in the relevant listed securities or derivatives did not have the inside information at the time of that decision. Further, the decision makers must not have received any advice from those in possession of the inside information. A person will also have a defence if the purpose for which they dealt in or counselled and procured another to deal in the listed securities or their derivatives or disclosed information did not include the purpose of securing or increasing a profit or avoiding or reducing a loss, whether for himself or another, by using the inside information. A defence is also available to a person who dealt or counselled or procured another to deal in a company's listed securities or their derivatives as agent, provided that they did not select or advise on the selection of the listed securities or their derivatives, and they did not know that the person for whom they acted was connected with that company or had the inside information. It's a defence if the dealing occurred off-market in Hong Kong, and the person dealing in the listed securities or their derivatives and the other party entered into the dealing directly with each other, and at the time of the dealing, the other party knew or ought reasonably to have known of the inside information. Where a person counseled or procured another person to deal in listed securities or their derivatives, that person will have a defence if they counseled or procured the other party to enter into the dealing directly with them, and at that time the other party knew or reasonably to have known of the inside information. It's a defence where a person dealt in listed securities or their derivatives but did not counsel or procure the other party to deal if, at the time of the dealing, the other party knew or ought reasonably to have known that such person was a person connected with the company. This defence operates on the assumption that people who transact with someone they knew or should know as a company insider should be on notice that the other party may be insider dealing and so should make adequate inquiries with the insider before dealing with them and maybe negotiate terms as to the disclosure of inside information. A person will also have a defence if they counselled or procured another person to deal in listed securities or their derivatives, and they can establish that the other party did not counsel or procure the other party to the dealing to deal in the listed securities or their derivatives if at the time the person counselled or procured the other person to deal, the other party to the dealing knew or reasonably to have known that the person was a person connected with the company. This gives a defence to a person who counsels or procures a person to deal in the same circumstances as a defence is available to a person who deals in the circumstances I just described. It's really a logical extension of that defense and would, for example, protect an investment bank who introduced a prospective purchaser to a substantial shareholder of a listed company who the bank thought might want to tender to sell their shareholding, where it advised the shareholder on the sale. A defense is available to a person who deals or counsels or procures another person to deal in a company's listed securities or their derivatives, where the person acted in connection with any dealing that was under consideration or the subject of negotiation, or in the course of a series of such dealings, and with a view to facilitating the dealing or the series of dealings. And the inside information was market information arising directly out of their involvement in the dealing or the series of dealings. Market information is defined in section 292 to include information consisting of one or more of the following facts: that there has or is to be or has not been or will not be a dealing in listed securities or their derivatives, or that any such dealing is under consideration or negotiation; the quantity and price or price range of the listed securities or their derivatives, and the identity of the persons involved. This gives a defense to a person who trades with knowledge of their own trading intentions or activities, and also to those who simply execute or facilitate a trade on their behalf. This defense caters for the situation in which a person whose trading activities might be price-sensitive information, for example, a substantial shareholder, and therefore a connected person, increases their stake in a listed company. Without such an explicit defense, a person dealing with insider information about their own trading activities would be technically insider dealing. Dealing subject to the rules of a recognized clearinghouse has the benefit of a defense where the deal is entered into by the clearinghouse with a clearing participant for the purposes of the clearing and settlement of a market transaction. Sections 272 and 293 provide a further defense where a trustee or personal representative deals in or counsels or procures a dealing in listed securities or their derivatives on advice obtained in good faith from an appropriate person who did not appear to them to be a person who would have been involved in insider dealing if such person had dealt in the listed securities or their derivatives. The SFO would not then regard these trustees or personal representatives to have engaged in market misconduct. Sections 273 and 294 also provide a defense where a person deals in listed securities or their derivatives in exercising a right to subscribe for or otherwise acquire the securities or their derivatives, where that right was granted to them or was derived from securities held by them because the person became aware of any inside information. I'm going to look now at the landmark case on the so-called innocent purpose defense under section 2713 of the SFO. That's the October 2018 decision in the SFC against Yu Hoi Ying Charles and others. This was a court of final appeal decision which found in favor of the SFC and related to insider dealing by Mr. Yu and Ms. Wong in the shares of Asia Telemedia Limited, of which they held 6 million and 10 million shares respectively. The facts were that Asia Telemedia owed 58 million Hong Kong dollars to a company called Goodpine Limited. In April 2007, Goodpine served a statutory demand on Asia Telemedia and said that it would issue a winding up petition against it if the debt was not repaid within 21 days. This information was known to Ms. Yu and Ms. Wong, but was not announced to the public. At the same time, Asia Telemedia's shares experienced a price surge. Mr. Yu and Ms. Wong took advantage of the price rise by selling their shares, making a net profit of 5.3 and 5.1 million Hong Kong dollars respectively. The SFC alleged in the Market Misconduct Tribunal proceedings that the respondent's knowledge of Goodpine Limited's statutory demand to Asia Telemedia constituted inside information and that they engaged in insider dealing when they relied on that information to dispose of their shares at a profit. Mr. Yu and Ms. Wong relied on the innocent purpose defense, claiming that the reason for their disposals was the speculative surge in Asia Telemedia's share price at the time, and not their knowledge of the inside information. That's to say, their knowledge of Goodpine's statutory demand for repayment of its loan and its threat to wind up the company if it was not repaid. They said that they believed Asia Telemedia's financial situation would be dealt with behind closed doors eventually and would not influence the market. The MMT and the Court of Appeal accepted that defence. However, the Court of Final Appeal rejected it in a 4-1 decision for the SFC. Whether Mr. Yu and Ms. Wong could rely on the defence turned on what constitutes use of the inside information. The Court of Final Appeal reasoned that using inside information means turning the possession of inside information into action. It considered the mere withholding of non-disclosure of inside information to be insufficient to show use of the inside information. The inside information had to be exploited for financial advantage. The respondents knew that the price of the Asia Telemedia shares was artificially high because of the inside information they possessed, and they disposed of the shares to profit from that knowledge. The court's ruling seemed to suggest that officers of a listed company who have inside information which is not publicly known when they deal in the company's securities may be considered to be using the inside information, and that the innocent purpose defense may not be available to them. The court considered the respondents' belief as to what might happen in the future, that is, that Asia Telemedia's financial situation would be dealt with behind closed doors and would not impact the share price, to be irrelevant. Accordingly, the defense does not apply if the inside information played a role in the decision-making, regardless of how big or small a role the inside information had in the decision-making process. What mattered was whether the elements of insider dealing were satisfied and whether the defense was applicable when the transaction took place. The implications of the judgment are that officers of listed companies who possess inside information should avoid dealing in the company's shares until the inside information has been publicly announced. The MMT made various orders against Mr. Yu and Ms. Wong, including a 3-year disqualification order against Mr. Yu and an HKICS disciplinary referral order against Ms. Wong. 3-year cold shoulder orders, cease and desist orders, disgorgement orders, and government and SFC costs orders were also imposed on both parties. I'll discuss MMT proceedings and the orders that can be imposed shortly. Moving on to the ramifications of insider dealing, the SFO establishes both civil and criminal insider dealing regimes. The MMT oversees civil proceedings and, where appropriate, imposes civil sanctions. The MMT is an independent body. Its chairman is a judge or former judge of the High Court appointed by Hong Kong's chief executive, who sits with 2 members who are prominent members of Hong Kong's business and professional community appointed by the financial secretary under the authority delegated by the chief executive. It is inquisitorial in nature and is entitled to direct that the SFC carry out further investigations and report its findings to the MMT. Under the SFO, the presenting officer is a lawyer whose role is to present evidence to the MMT, who must be independent. The presenting officer acts more like a prosecuting counsel than a counsel assisting the tribunal. Section 252 of the SFO allows the SFC to institute proceedings before the MMT if it considers that market misconduct has or may have taken place. The purpose of MMT proceedings is to determine whether any market misconduct has taken place, the identity of those who have engaged in market misconduct, and the amount of any profit gained or loss avoided as a result of the market misconduct. The MMT can identify a person as having engaged in insider dealing if they conducted any insider dealing, or if insider dealing was committed by a company of which they are an officer with their consent or connivance. A person can also be found to have engaged in insider dealing if another person engaged in insider dealing and they assisted or connived with that person in committing insider dealing, knowing that the conduct constituted or might constitute insider dealing. The MMT makes its findings on the civil standard of proof and therefore needs to be satisfied that a person has engaged in insider dealing on the balance of probabilities rather than beyond reasonable doubt, which is the criminal standard of proof. The MMT has powers to receive any evidence, whether or not the evidence would be admissible in civil or criminal proceedings, and has wide powers to compel the giving of evidence and to prevent the publication of information about the evidence it receives. A person is not excused from complying with an MMT requirement to give evidence on the grounds that to do so might incriminate him, Section 2534, and compelled self-incriminatory evidence can be considered by the MMT. Various issues regarding the nature of MMT proceedings and the burden of proof that applies in the case of SFT against Cheng Chak Nyok and another in September 2018 was a case which involved an appeal by the SFC against the MMT's decision that Mr. Cheng had not engaged in insider dealing in shares of China Gas Holdings Limited. The Court of Appeal allowed the appeal and examined certain principles. Mr. Cheng was the executive director, CFO and company secretary of ENN Energy Holdings Limited, which in 2011 considered acquiring China Gas. China Petroleum and Chemical Corporation, Sinopec, agreed to form a consortium with ENN to finance the acquisition. Mr. Cheng had responsibility for negotiating the financial proposal for ENN. He obtained information regarding the consortium formed to finance the acquisition, the timing of the announcement of the general offer, and the offer price. The SFC considered that Mr. Cheng had committed insider dealing when he used a third-party securities account to purchase China Gas shares immediately prior to its suspension of share trading before the announcement of the general offer. He made a profit of approximately 3 million Hong Kong dollars when he later sold the shares. However, on the available evidence, the MMT decided that it was not satisfied on a balance of probabilities that Mr. Cheng had dealt in China Gas shares at the material times. Consequently, insider dealing could not be proved. The SFC appealed against that decision. The SFC raised four grounds of appeal. The first ground was that the MMT had erred in law in misdirecting itself that the inquiry was adversarial in nature, misdirecting itself that the burden of proof applied and rested with the SFC, and failing to exercise its investigative powers under the SFO. The SFC's second ground was that the MMT had in substance applied the criminal standard of proof, which required the SFC to prove the case beyond reasonable doubt. It had also applied evidential principles applicable to criminal proceedings in evaluating the evidence. The third ground was that the MMT erred in concluding that it could not be satisfied that Mr. Cheng had engaged in insider dealing on a balance of probabilities. The fourth ground was that the MMT failed to exercise its investigative powers under the SFO before reaching its conclusion. The Court of Appeal noted that the nature of the MMT's inquiry on market misconduct is civil and inquisitorial. This means that the judge has an examining or inquiring role in investigating the facts rather than the impartial role of the judge in the accusatorial system. The function of the MMT is to inquire into the question of insider dealing, not to decide between competing positions or claims. MMT proceedings are thus inquisitorial. As the nature of inquiry by the MMT is civil, the standard of proof is on a balance of probabilities. Case law establishes that the standard of proof will be proportional to the seriousness of the allegations. In other words, the more serious the allegation, the more compelling the evidence required. The concept of burden of proof is only relevant in adversarial proceedings. In inquisitorial proceedings, no party has the burden of proof. On the face of the applicable standard of proof, the Court of Appeal determined that the MMT had not properly evaluated the available evidence and was wrong in applying the criminal standard of proof. The MMT accepted that Mr. Cheng's evidence was confusing and suspicious, but insisted on the SFC providing more compelling evidence to prove the case. The Court found that the MMT had erred in requiring the SFC to prove the case on the basis of the criminal standard of proof. The Court of Appeal also found that the MMT had incorrectly imposed the burden of proof on the SFC. The Court of Appeal said that no burden of proof needs to be imposed in an inquisitorial inquiry, and that in MMT proceedings, the SFC is only required under the SFO to present evidence and information to the MMT, which should investigate the facts to reach a decision on the balance of probabilities. The Court of Appeal allowed the SFC's appeal and remitted the matter to a differently constituted tribunal to determine the sole question of whether Mr. Cheng had dealt in the shares. The other elements of market misconduct had been established and were not challenged in the appeal. In the MMT retrial in November 2020, the MMT concluded that on the basis of the evidence, it was more probable than not that Mr. Cheng dealt in China Gas shares. In making its determination, the MMT considered that Mr. Chang's evidence was unreliable and that he did not give a coherent, cogent, complete or credible account. The MMT attached no weight to his evidence. The MMT also took into account evidence that the securities accounts were opened with the assistance of Mr. Chang, and that he made arrangements to receive all correspondence and statements relating to the securities accounts. The MMT considered the evidence that there was a clear correlation between the trading of the China Gas shares and the acquisition of inside information by Mr. Chang. It also considered that there was a correlation between Mr. Chang's whereabouts and the sources of the orders placed to trace the shares. The MMT found that neither a third-party nominee nor an unidentified individual would have been in a position to place the orders. The MMT therefore determined that Mr. Chang had engaged in insider dealing. In June 2021, the MMT made various orders against Mr. Chang, including a 54-month disqualification order, a 52-month cold shoulder order, a cease and desist order, a disgorgement order in the amount of almost $3 million Hong Kong dollars, government and SFC cost orders, and an HKI CPA disciplinary referral order. At the end of any proceedings, the MMT can, under subsection 2571 of the SFO, impose a range of sanctions on any person found to have committed market misconduct, including a disqualification order, cold shoulder order, cease and desist order, disgorgement order, cost orders, or a disciplinary referral. The MMT has no power to impose a fine. Just looking at a few of the orders the MMT can impose. A disqualification order is typically an order preventing a person from being a director of a listed company or being involved in a listed company's management for up to 5 years, except with the leave of the court. A cold shoulder order is an order prohibiting a person from dealing in any type of financial product for up to 5 years, unless with the leave of the court. A disgorgement order is an order for a person to pay to the government an amount up to the amount of any profit gained or loss avoided as a result of market misconduct. Disciplinary referral orders are orders that anybody that can take disciplinary action against a person as one of its members should be recommended to take action against that person. A cease and desist order is an order that a person should not again engage in any specified type of market misconduct. The MMT can also order a person to pay the costs and expenses incurred by the government and the SFC in investigating the case and bringing proceedings. The MMT can take into account any previous convictions in Hong Kong, any previous findings of market misconduct by the MMT, and any previous findings of insider dealing under the predecessor ordinance, the Securities Insider Dealing Ordinance 257, subsection 2 of the SFO. Failure to comply with a disqualification, cold shoulder, or cease and desist order is a criminal offence, punishable by a maximum fine of $1 million Hong Kong dollars and or up to 2 years imprisonment. In addition, sections 2532 and 2546 prescribe a penalty of a maximum fine of $1 million Hong Kong dollars and a maximum of 2 years imprisonment for failure to comply with various requirements of the MMT or disrupting its proceedings. The conduct referred to in those sections and in sections 25710 and 25810 is also liable to be punished as contempt under section 261. Any person who is dissatisfied with a finding or determination of the MMT can appeal to the Court of Appeal, but only in respect of a point of law or with the leave of the Court of Appeal on a question of fact. That's section 266. Under the SFO, a party who is not satisfied with certain decisions of the SFC can appeal to the Securities and Futures Appeal Tribunal. The SFAT proceedings are civil in nature and use the civil standard of proof, except for charges of contempt. I'm now going to take a look at a couple more cases. In China Huiyuan Juice Group Limited, the MMT found that Ms. Sun Min had engaged in insider dealing when she purchased shares of China Huiyuan Juice Group Limited, a mainland Chinese fruit drinks producer listed on the main board of the Hong Kong Stock Exchange ahead of its announcement that it would be acquired by Coca-Cola. Ms. Sun made a profit of over 55 million Hong Kong dollars when she sold all her shares in the company within 48 hours after the announcement of the Coca-Cola takeover. It appeared that Ms. Sun had been tipped off by a connected person who knew about the pending takeover. However, the SFC was unable to identify which connected person was the source of the inside information. She denied having any inside information or knowledge of the takeover. The SFC's case against her centered on circumstantial evidence and inferences from handwritten notes on the Coca-Cola takeover found in Ms. Sun's secretary's diary, which were taken in a meeting between Ms. Sun, her husband, her secretary, and the CEO of Ms. Sun's shipping company. The secretary was unable to recall how the information was collected or whether it was passed to her employer. The MMT held that if the identity of the connected person who passed on the inside information could not be ascertained, the MMT would decide, based on all available evidence, whether a compelling inference could be drawn that the inside information must have been from an unidentified connected person and that Ms. Sun must have known of that fact. The information did not constitute a mere rumor and was fact specific. Some of the handwritten notes in the diary concerned PRC antitrust law. The MMT considered that an ordinary investor would not have considered PRC antitrust law issues unless they knew of the potential Coca-Cola takeover. On that basis, the MMT inferred that the information came from an insider, even though the insider's identity could not be ascertained. The MMT also considered that the inside information in the diary must have come from Ms. Sun, or she must have known of the information. Absent any reasonable reason that would have been passed on in the normal course of events, the MMT therefore rejected the secretary's evidence that she was unsure whether she had passed on the information to Ms. Sun. The Wardley case involved a former company secretary, Lowe, who held around 1.6 million Wardley shares, and a lender and potential investor in Wardley, Lou, who held around 50 million Wardley shares. In mid-2006, Wardley encountered cash flow problems, and both Lowe and Lou sold their shares in batches in late March and April 2007. The SFC alleged that Lowe and Lou engaged in insider dealing in Wardley shares because at the time they sold their shares, they were in possession of price-sensitive information regarding Wardley's poor financials, which were not publicly known. In selling the shares, they avoided incurring a loss. The SFC alleged that certain events were inside information. These included the tightening of banking facilities from July 2006 and events such as overdue loans, rescheduled payments, and the issue of demand letters and writs by the company's banks and lenders. The inside information also included Wardley's failure to repay loans and interest due to Lou and the grant of further loans. The MMT found that the information regarding Wardley's poor financial situation was already known to the public as it had been disclosed in its annual report of August 2006 and its interim report for the 6 months ended 31st of October 2006. The writs for the unrepaid loans were also in the public domain, which had no adverse impact on the stock price. The information was therefore not inside information, and Lowe and Lou were found not to have engaged in insider dealing. All forms of market misconduct, including insider dealing, are liable to prosecution as a criminal offence under Part 14 of the SFO and are potentially subject to a maximum penalty of 10 years imprisonment and a fine of up to 10 million Hong Kong dollars. The court can also make disqualification, cold shoulder and disciplinary referral orders, non-compliance with which is an offence punishable by a maximum fine of 1 million Hong Kong dollars and up to 2 years imprisonment. A person will not be subject to the double jeopardy of both civil proceedings under Part 13 and criminal proceedings under Part 14 for the same conduct. The SFO provides that a person who has been subject to criminal proceedings under Part 14 cannot be subject to MMT proceedings if those proceedings are still pending or if no further criminal prosecution could be brought against that person again under Part 14 in respect of the same conduct and vice versa. Sections 283 and 307. The decision as to whether to take civil or criminal proceedings in relation to suspected market misconduct is made by the Secretary for Justice based on two criteria: there being sufficient evidence and the proceedings being in the public interest. The SFC can also institute summary criminal proceedings before a magistrate for less serious market misconduct offences, although the Secretary for Justice is able to intervene in the SFC's conduct of any such proceedings. Sections 281 and 305 of the SFO provide a private right of civil action against any person who has committed market misconduct or an offence under Part 14 of the SFO in favour of anyone who has suffered a pecuniary loss as a result. However, that right only exists if it's fair, just and reasonable for the perpetrator to be liable. This means that anyone who suffers pecuniary loss as a result of market misconduct has a right of civil action to seek compensation. Under the SFO, a person is taken to have committed market misconduct if they have carried out any market misconduct or if a company of which they are an officer carried out the market misconduct with their consent or connivance, or if any other person committed market misconduct and they assisted or connived with that person in carrying out the market misconduct, knowing that that conduct constituted or might constitute market misconduct. There is no need for there to have been a finding of market misconduct by the MMT or a criminal conviction under Part 14 before civil proceedings are started. Findings of the MMT are, however, admissible in the civil proceedings as prima facie evidence that the market misconduct took place or that a person engaged in market misconduct and a criminal conviction constitutes conclusive evidence that the person committed the offence. The courts are able to impose injunctions in addition to or in substitution for damages. Sections 280 and 304 of the SFO provide that a transaction is not void or voidable by reason only that it constitutes market misconduct. Section 279 of the SFO imposes a duty on all officers of a listed company to take reasonable measures to ensure that proper safeguards are in place to prevent it from carrying out any market misconduct. The definition of an officer includes a director, including a shadow director, and any person occupying the position of a director, a manager or secretary of, or any other person involved in the management of the listed company. This could in principle cover supervisors and anyone else with management responsibilities. Under Section 258 of the SFO, if a company is identified as having been engaged in market misconduct and the market misconduct is directly or indirectly attributable to a breach by any person as an officer of the company of the duty imposed on him under Section 279, the MMT can make one or more of the orders I talked about before in relation to that person, even if that person has not been identified as having engaged in market misconduct himself. Under Section 390 of the SFO, where it's proved that an offence committed under Part 14 was aided, abetted, counsel, procured or induced by, or committed with the consent or connivance of, or attributable to the recklessness of any officer of the company or any person purporting to act in that capacity, that person as well as the company is guilty of the offence and liable to be punished in accordance with Part 14. Under Part 9 of the SFO, any regulated person, that's any person licensed or registered by the SFC who's guilty of misconduct or who, in the opinion of the SFC, is not a fit and proper person to be or to remain the same type of regulated person, is subject to a widened range of disciplinary procedures. Misconduct is defined to include any contravention of the SFO or of the terms of any license issued or registration made under it. The SFC can revoke or suspend a person's license in respect of all or any part of the regulated activities for which they're licensed, or can impose a fine not exceeding the greater of 10 million Hong Kong dollars or 3 times the amount of the profit gained or loss avoided by the regulated person as the result of their misconduct or such other conduct which led to the SFC's opinion that such person is not fit and proper. Prohibition orders can also be imposed by the SFC in order to prevent an offending person from, among other things, applying to be registered or licensed under the SFO. Approvals granted to responsible officers may also be suspended or revoked. The definition of persons covered in these provisions include corporations licensed under the SFO, their responsible officers and managers, and persons involved in the management. Authorized financial institutions, which must be registered with the SFC to conduct regulated activities, for example, securities dealing and asset management, their executive officers, persons involved in the management of their regulated business, and individuals named in their register as carrying out a regulated activity, are also subject to the SFC's disciplinary regime. I'm now going to talk about Section 213 of the SFO, which allows the SFC to apply to the Court of First Instance for various orders. The purpose of these orders is to prevent or remedy breaches of the SFO and other relevant ordinances. The SFC has come to rely on this provision a lot in recent years. Firstly, as a means of protecting the assets of those suspected of market misconduct to ensure that those assets will be available to compensate investors for their losses resulting from the misconduct. Section 213 has also been used by the SFC as a means of obtaining financial compensation for investors through the grant of so-called restoration orders, which are orders for the wrongdoer to put the counterparties to its transactions back in the same position they were in before entering into the transactions. The court can make an order under Section 213 against a person who has contravened a relevant provision or any other person who has aided, abetted, or assisted in that person's contribution of a relevant provision, or induced a person to commit the contravention, or been knowingly involved in, directly or indirectly, or a party to the contravention. Section 213 is remedial in nature and is concerned with handling the adverse consequences of actual or potential market misconduct. Proceedings are standalone proceedings and are intended to provide remedies to protect the interests of those involved in the relevant transactions. The orders that the Court of First Instance can grant include injunctions and orders requiring the person to take steps to restore the parties to a transaction to the position they were in before the transaction, or restraining or prohibiting a person from acquiring, disposing of, or dealing in any property. To provide compensation to investors, the court will frequently issue so-called restoration orders. These compel the wrongdoer to take the necessary measures to put the affected investors back in the same position they were in before the transaction was entered into. The court's power to make an order is subject to a requirement that it considers the order to be desirable and that no one will be unfairly prejudiced by the order. The landmark case on the application of Section 213 and its use to grant compensation to investors is the SFC against Tiger Asia. This decision confirmed the power of the Court of First Instance to make orders sought by the SFC under 213 on the basis of insider dealing or other market misconduct, without there having been a prior finding of insider dealing by the market misconduct tribunal or a criminal court. Tiger Asia was a US-based hedge fund manager which received confidential and price-sensitive information regarding upcoming placements of the shares of China Construction Bank and Bank of China. Tiger Asia then took short positions in the shares of the two banks before the placings were publicly announced, making a substantial notional profit. Tiger Asia also manipulated China Construction Bank's share price downward during the closing auction session. The court imposed an injunction freezing the assets of Tiger Asia and three of its senior officers pending the grant of the final orders. It then ordered the unwinding of transactions between Tiger Asia and 1,800 sellers of the bank's shares and ordered Tiger Asia and two of its senior officials to pay around 45.3 million Hong Kong dollars to the sellers to restore them to their position before the share sales to Tiger Asia. Tiger Asia and one of the officers were also banned from trading securities in Hong Kong for 4 years. This was the first time the SFC obtained a restoration order against insider dealers to compensate investors for losses as resulting from insider dealing. Since the Tiger Asia decision, Section 213 has become the SFC's go-to remedy for obtaining investor compensation in insider dealing cases. Another major case under Section 213 of the SFO was the 2009 case of Hong Kong SAR against Du Jun. Du Jun, the former managing director of Morgan Stanley, was convicted of insider dealing in China Resources Holding shares worth 86 million Hong Kong dollars during an acquisition. He was sentenced to 6 years imprisonment and fined 1.7 million Hong Kong dollars. In separate civil proceedings brought by the SFC under Section 213, the Court of First Instance first ordered the freezing of Du Jun's assets. Subsequently, the court granted a restoration order requiring him to pay approximately 24 million Hong Kong dollars to 237 investors who had sold shares to Du Jun in order to restore them to their pre-transaction positions. The court also imposed a 5-year ban on Du Jun from serving as a director or managing director of a listed company as well as from dealing in securities in Hong Kong. The case illustrates that despite the double jeopardy provisions that prevent the bringing of both civil and criminal insider dealing proceedings, the SFC can pursue criminal proceedings for insider dealing and civil proceedings to obtain remedial orders under Section 213 of the SFO. I'm now going to look at the Re Telly I Holdings Limited case, another instance where the SFC sought a restoration order under Section 213 of the SFO to provide compensation to affected direct investors. In November 2021, the Court of First Instance determined that Ms. Yik and her two associates, Ms. Wei and Mr. Wang, had committed insider dealing in the shares of Telly I, which is currently known as Circutech International Holdings Limited, a company listed on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange. In early 2016, Ms. Yik acted as the representative of Telly I's controlling shareholder in negotiating a proposed takeover of Telly I with the offeror. Between the 1st of March and the 12th of April 2016, Ms. Yik purchased shares in Telly I through securities accounts held by Ms. Wei, who was Ms. Yik's niece, and Mr. Huang, who is married to Ms. Wei. Mr. Huang also purchased Telly I shares through their securities account. Ms. Yik controlled all these accounts as she had authority to operate them. A total of 22.7 million Telly I shares were purchased through these accounts. When the takeover of Telly I was announced on the 14th of April 2016, the company's share price rose by over 70%. 15 million shares were then sold from the accounts, making a profit of nearly 13 million Hong Kong dollars. The SFC started civil proceedings against the three individuals under Section 213 of the SFO in September 2016. In 2017, the Court of First Instance granted a Moraver injunction over Ms. Yik's assets in Hong Kong, up to 25.9 million Hong Kong dollars, and Ms. Wei and Mr. Huang undertook to pay into court almost 13 million Hong Kong dollars, equivalent to the suspected profits made by the three defendants in carrying out the insider dealing. In November 2021, the court convicted Ms. Yik of insider dealing. The court found that Ms. Yik, as a person connected to Telly I, had obtained material information which she knew was inside information in relation to Telly I and knowingly dealt in Telly I's listed shares. Ms. Yik was found to be a person connected with Telly I as she acted as the company's representative in discussing the proposed takeover with the intended buyer's representative. From late February 2016 onwards, she also served as the seller's representative in the negotiations with the buyer's representatives and reported the progress of negotiations to the seller. In this capacity, Ms. Yik was extensively involved in the transaction discussions. She reviewed and commented on the draft sale and purchase agreement and other draft documents, attended all meetings with the buyer's representatives, and was copied on all emails concerning the draft sale and purchase agreement, the closing timetable, and the price of the Telly I shares. She was very much involved in the negotiations with the buyer, and this gave her direct access to all inside information relating to the takeover at a time when that information was confined to the parties and was not publicly available. As I previously mentioned, to constitute inside information, there are three limbs. The first and second components, that the information was specific information about Telly I and its listed stocks and was not generally known to relevant investors, was not in dispute. The third component, material price sensitivity, was also satisfied. The material impact on the company's share price was demonstrated by investors' reaction to the announcement of the takeover. The court found ample evidence demonstrating that Ms. Yik was aware that the information in her possession was inside information at the relevant time. First, Ms. Yik had received training on inside trading regulation in September 2015, during which she was explicitly informed of the definition of inside information. Ms. Yik had also asked the buyer's representative to provide a non-disclosure agreement. The agreement made clear that the information about the proposed takeover had to be kept confidential by the buyer. The draft joint announcement circulated to Ms. Yik on the 7th of April 2016 also made clear that the subject information was confidential and would only be made public when the joint announcement was published. It was clear that Ms. Yik had dealt in Telly I's listed shares, She placed all the buy orders for TalyEye's shares, and on the 1st of April 2016, she confirmed instructions to buy up to 5 million TalyEye shares. The court also found that two other defendants, Ms. Wei and Mr. Huang, had each committed the offence of insider dealing. They each dealt in TalyEye's listed shares, despite having information which they knew was inside information relating to TalyEye, which they received from Ms. Yik, someone they knew to be connected with TalyEye, and who they knew or had reasonable cause to believe held the information as a result of being connected with TalyEye. Based on the court's finding that the defendants had committed insider dealing, the court of first instance made restoration orders under section 213 of the SFO, ordering the payment of almost 13 million Hong Kong dollars in illicit profits to 63 counterparties who had sold their TalyEye shares to Ms. Wei or Mr. Huang. The order was a restoration order, restoring the transaction counterparties to their positions before they entered into the TalyEye share sales. I'm now going to talk about some other insider dealing cases. In a December 2020 case, the Eastern Magistrates Court convicted Mr. Chao Chu Chi, the company secretary of China Automation Group, of insider dealing in the company's shares. Chao was subsequently sentenced to 45 days imprisonment and fined 45,000 Hong Kong dollars. Chao gained knowledge of a possible general offer and was directed to arrange for the suspension of trading in the company's shares. He then proceeded to purchase 534,000 shares in the company through his wife's securities account before the suspension took place. The following day, China Automation publicly announced the possible general offer. When trading resumed, the company's share price rose approximately 19% from the previous closing price. Chao sold a portion of the China Automation shares, realizing profit of 7,417 Hong Kong dollars. The notional profit of the remaining unsold shares was 36,865 Hong Kong dollars. The SFC found that Chao had access to inside information by virtue of his position as company secretary and had used the information to profit from trading the company's shares, thereby gaining an unfair advantage in the market. The case of the SFC against Chan Pak Ho Pablo provided important guidance on sentencing in insider dealing cases. Chan was found guilty of insider dealing. For his conviction, the court initially sentenced him to 240 hours of community service and ordered to pay the SFC's investigation costs. The sentence was then reviewed, and the Eastern Magistrates Court sentenced Chan to 4 months imprisonment and fined him 120,000 Hong Kong dollars. Chan appealed to the court of first instance, and the original sentence was restored. The court said that the magistrate lacked jurisdiction to grant the application for a review of a sentence once Chan had lodged notice of appeal. The court of final appeal reversed that decision, stating that a pending appeal against one part of a magistrate's decision does not preclude review of another part of the decision. The court of final appeals restored the sentence of 4 months imprisonment and fine. Justice Robert Ribeiro affirmed that appropriate sentencing in insider dealing cases is a custodial sentence and a fine to disgorge all profits made from the insider dealing. The SFC took action on several cases involving insider dealing in the shares of listed companies undergoing privatizations in 2023. The first case involved the SFC starting MMT proceedings against a former executive deputy director of China CITIC Bank International Limited, Mr. Wu Kam Sheng, for alleged insider dealing in the shares of mainboard listed Blue Marge Biotech Corporation Limited, which was being privatized. Mr. Wu was working for CITIC on a loan to finance another company's offer to privatize the listed company. Before the privatization was made public, Mr. Wu purchased over a million of the listed company shares through his own and his wife's securities accounts. He subsequently sold nearly all the shares after the privatization was announced, making a profit of about 3 million Hong Kong dollars. The MMT found that Wu's conduct amounted to insider dealing. On the 30th of July 2024, the MMT had made a series of orders against Wu, including, amongst others, to disgorge all the profits made from the insider dealing, a three-year disqualification order preventing Wu from being a director or holding various other positions, and a ban on dealing in various securities and investments for 3 years. The second case involved the SFC starting Section 213 proceedings against a manager at an investment bank, Ms. Sang, and her friend, Mr. Kwok, in relation to their suspected insider dealing in the shares of IT Limited, a main board listed company. Ms. Sang allegedly obtained inside information about the privatization and tipped off her friend. They then bought 2.8 million shares in the company through Kwok Securities accounts. When the planned privatization was announced, the share price rose 44.8% and they immediately sold the shares, making a profit of over 4 million Hong Kong dollars. The SFC sought freezing orders over the assets of Ms. Sang and Mr. Barry Kwok under Section 213 of the SFO, which were granted by the Court of First Instance in May 2023. Similarly, in October 2023, the Eastern Magistrates Court sentenced Mr. Wong Pak Wai to 240 hours of community service after he pleaded guilty to dealing in the shares of Elec, an Altec international company, a listed company. At the time of the offence, Mr. Wong held the position of personal assistant to the chairman and executive director of King Board Holdings. In 2020, Mr. Wong became aware of a potential privatization of Elec and Altec that was being proposed by the chairman and executive director of King Board Holdings. Knowing that this information was inside information, Mr. Wong proceeded to purchase 3,000 Elec and Altec shares. Upon resumption of trading, the share price increased by 63%. Mr. Wong immediately sold his shares, making a profit of $19,080. The magistrate highlighted that insider dealing is a serious crime and that normally the appropriate sentence is immediate imprisonment. However, given the relatively small amount involved and Mr. Wong's early admission of liability, the magistrate deemed a community service order to be appropriate. In August 2024, the MMT found that Mr. Lee Kwok Chong and Mr. Lee Han Chun, the former chairman and chief executive officer of China Forestry Holdings, had disclosed false and misleading information in the company's IPO prospectus in 2009, as well as its annual results for the year ended 31st December 2009. The MMT found that the company's financial statements were grossly misleading and that there were a number of other serious irregularities, including a large number of falsified documents. The MMT also determined that Mr. Lee Han Chun and his investment vehicle engaged in insider dealing. In January 2011, immediately before the disclosure of the company's financial woes, Mr. Lee sold 119 million shares of the company, avoiding a loss estimated at about 353 million Hong Kong dollars. The MMT concluded that Mr. Lee had engaged in insider dealing by disposing of his shares in the company, knowing that the company's prospectus and annual results contained false or misleading information and that its auditors were intending to investigate areas where falsification of documentation had occurred. The MMT was also satisfied that when Mr. Lee Han Chun sold his shares, he knew that the auditors' investigations could reveal the true situation and severely impact the company's share price. The SFC can also issue a written notice under Section 204 and 205 of the SFO to prohibit a licensed corporation from disposing of or dealing in any property it holds on behalf of its clients. In August 2022, the SFC issued a restriction notice to Bright Smart, an SFC licensed broker, freezing assets held in a client account, holding the proceeds of suspected insider dealing. Since Bright Smart was not the subject of the SFC's investigation into suspected insider dealing, the restriction notice did not affect Bright Smart's operations or its other clients. The SFC considered that the issue of the restriction notice was in the interest of the investing public, since it prevented the dissipation of the proceeds of suspected insider dealing held in a Bright Smart client account. I'm now going to talk about the changes that will be made to the SFO to broaden the territorial scope of the insider dealing regime, as provided for in the SFC's consultation conclusions on proposed amendments to the enforcement-related provisions of the SFO, published in August 2023. The statutory amendments are still in the works, and the SFC notes that the amendments will be available to the public during the legislative process. Currently, the SFO's civil and criminal insider dealing regimes apply only to securities listed on a recognized stock market. That's a stock market operated by the Hong Kong Stock Exchange and their derivatives. As I mentioned earlier, the insider dealing regime currently does not apply to securities that are only listed overseas or their derivatives. even if the insider dealing is carried on in Hong Kong. The current regime also does not explicitly apply to insider dealing involving Hong Kong listed securities or their derivatives where the relevant conduct occurs outside of Hong Kong. The proposed amendments to the SFO will therefore expand the insider dealing regime so that it covers both insider dealing conducted in Hong Kong in relation to securities listed on overseas stock markets and their derivatives, as well as insider dealing conducted outside of Hong Kong if it involves any Hong Kong listed securities or their derivatives. The SFO civil and criminal insider dealing provisions currently do not apply where the relevant securities are only listed outside of Hong Kong or their derivatives, even where the Act specified in Sections 270, Subsection 1 or 291 of the SFO have occurred in Hong Kong. The courts have dealt with cases of suspected insider dealing in Hong Kong of overseas listed securities or their derivatives by providing intelligence to the relevant overseas securities regulators or relying on the fraud or deception market misconduct provisions of the SFO, such as Section 300. In the Yung Bik Fung case, which I discussed earlier, two Hong Kong solicitors dealt in the shares of a company listed in Taiwan on the basis of inside information. Their conduct was not covered by the inside dealing provisions because the shares were not listed in Hong Kong. The SFC therefore obtained civil remedies against the defendants under Section 213 of the SFO, which the court granted on the basis of the defendant's breach of Section 300. One of the reasons for the SFC amending the SFO to extend it to insider dealing in overseas listed securities and their derivatives is that the nature and amount of relief available in Section 213 proceedings differs depending on whether the provisions breached are the insider dealing provisions or Section 300. For example, in the Yung Bik Fung case, as Betty, a fiduciary, had defrauded or deceived her principals, her employer, the law firm, and its client, the Hong Kong Bank, the Section 213 restoration order granted based on the Section 300 contravention was to return the profits from the illicit trades to the bank. The bank was a victim of the fraud or deception. However, if the restoration order had been based on a contravention of the insider dealing provisions, that's Section 270 or 291, the order would have been calculated on the basis of restoring the affected investors impacted by the illicit trades to the position they were in before they entered into the share sales to the defendants. In another previous case, a Hong Kong licensed intermediary dealt in the securities of an overseas listed entity prior to the announcement of a placing exercise. The dealing occurred when the intermediary possessed inside information which had been provided by another Hong Kong-based licensed intermediary. Apart from the mechanics of trading, the acts relating to the offence occurred in Hong Kong. However, the SFC noted in its consultation paper that as it did not have adequate evidence to establish that the suspect had engaged in any fraudulent or deceptive acts in relation to the transactions, it could not take action under Section 300 of the SFO. This highlighted the very different elements of the Section 300 offence and those of the insider dealing provisions. Fraud and or deception are key elements of Section 300, but are not elements of the insider dealing prohibitions. Also, Section 300 is a criminal offence, and the criminal standard of proof applies. There's no civil equivalent provision under Part 13. The SFC will therefore proceed with its proposed extension of the SFO insider dealing regime to cover any act of insider dealing which takes place in Hong Kong in relation to overseas listed securities or their derivatives. The amended provisions will also stipulate that the relevant misconduct must also be unlawful in the relevant overseas jurisdiction. The SFO insider dealing provisions currently do not explicitly apply to insider dealing involving Hong Kong listed securities or their derivatives where the acts contravening Section 270 or 291 occurred outside of Hong Kong. Due to the lack of express provisions stipulating the territorial nature of the insider dealing regime, in each individual case, the SFC applies the common law test of whether a substantial measure of the activities of the crime have taken place within Hong Kong to determine the territorial jurisdiction. According to the consultation paper, over 60% of the insider dealing cases handled by the SFC between 2017 and 2021 related to insider dealing carried out outside of Hong Kong involving Hong Kong listed securities or their derivatives. The SFC will therefore extend the SFO insider dealing regime to cover any act of insider dealing which takes place outside of Hong Kong involving Hong Kong-listed securities or their derivatives. The SFC noted in the consultation conclusions that SFC licensed intermediaries will be required to report any breach of the insider dealing provisions to the SFC under Section 12.5 of the Code of Conduct for persons licensed by or registered with the Securities and Futures Commission. Licensed intermediaries will need to submit a report to the SFC when they become aware of any suspected breach of the insider dealing provisions and to use their best endeavours to obtain the necessary data to include in their report to the SFC. The SFC will therefore amend the definition of listed in sections 2452 and 2852 of the SFO to include overseas listed securities and their derivatives, as well as Hong Kong listed securities and their derivatives. A new section will be added to expand the territorial scope of the insider dealing regime to cover acts of insider dealing that involve Hong Kong listed securities, irrespective of where they occur. Insider dealing in overseas listed securities or their derivatives will also constitute insider dealing if any one or more of the insider dealing acts occurs in Hong Kong and the conduct is also unlawful in the jurisdiction of the securities offshore listing. The SFC will also repeal sections 270 subsection 2 and 291 subsection 7, which currently extend the scope of the insider dealing provisions to dealings in securities dual listed in Hong Kong and overseas or their derivatives, as these sections will be redundant once dealing in overseas listed securities is brought within the scope of the SFO's insider dealing offences. The insider dealing provisions will also be amended so that section 2715 of the SFO, which is the off-market dealings defense, will also be available in respect of insider dealing involving overseas listed securities or their derivatives. The SFC will additionally align the two formulations of the mens rea element for insider dealing taking place through disclosure of inside information. As I touched on earlier, the mens rea element of sections 272B and 2917B, which apply to dual listed securities and their derivatives, is satisfied where the person disclosing the inside information knows or has reasonable cause to believe that the other person to whom the information is disclosed or some other person will deal in the listed securities or their derivatives. On the other hand, the mens rea element of the other subsections of sections 270 and 291, which apply to securities listed only in Hong Kong and their derivatives, is satisfied where the person disclosing the inside information knows or has reasonable cause to believe that only the other person to whom the information is disclosed will deal in the listed securities or their derivatives. The formulation of the mens rea element that applies to Hong Kong listed securities or their derivatives is therefore narrower, as it does not cover dealing by some other person. The SFC will therefore align the two formulations by adopting the broader formulation under sections 272B and 2917B. Finally, it's worth mentioning that the SFC issued a consultation in October 2023 proposing new guidelines for market sounding. In short, market sounding alludes to the communication or discussion with potential investors to access their level of interest in a potential securities transaction and or exploring the terms of such transaction, such as the prospective size, pricing, structure and selling approach. This communication can involve non-public information, which may or may not be inside information, and it typically occurs before the announcement of the securities transaction. The SFC noted that intermediaries' practices differ in terms of their risk controls over market sounding. While most intermediaries have controls which protect them from committing insider dealing, some adopt a broader approach during market sounding and have controls covering all non-public information, not just inside information. The regulator proposes to establish a common set of core principles and requirements that disclosing persons and recipients will need to follow when conducting market sounding. These will apply to the disclosure of all non-public information and not just inside information, and all SFC-regulated intermediaries will need to adhere to them. Unfortunately, we don't have time to go through the proposed guidelines in detail during this webinar. In any event, the SFC has yet to issue its final conclusions on the consultation as of today. So that brings us to the conclusion of my presentation. Thank you again for joining me and sticking with this, and I hope you enjoyed the webinar. Bye.